Fans around the world, thank you for joining me once again here on Talk and Fight for another edition of Boxing News Today. And we have quite a few slugfests and completely brutal fights to talk about that ended in showers of blood streaming down the faces of several combatants this particular past few days. We saw Australian Tim Siu battle his heart out despite an incredibly severe cut on his forehead suffered when he I would say moved in he led with his head you might have said there and gotten cut by Fandura's elbow. Anyway, it ended up with Tim simply being unable to see, and as you all know, I thought Tim was going to win this fight. I think many among us certainly thought Tim would win this fight as well. Fandura was stepping in at the last moment, but certainly was a tall man to deal with. But I think Tim should have been able to beat him on the inside, probably could have beaten him on the inside had he been able to see. So although it was gory, to be blunt, it was a 12-round split decision at the end of the day. It was a fight that took place over in Las Vegas, the T-Mobile Arena, as you all know now. And quite frankly, if you cruise through the headlines around the world, it's sending shockwaves. I mean, this is one heck of a fight. You might ask, not that you would, but you might ask, why wouldn't the doctor step in and stop it? Because the corner men were unable to stop the bleeding throughout the entire fight. And even at the end of it, the referee was soaked in blood. Shouldn't be laughing. Sorry, wasn't laughing. The debate rages, whether the doctor should have ended the fight, whether Fandura elbowed him. I'm not going to say intentionally. It certainly didn't look intentional to me. But at the end of the day, Fandura won the fight, and now he has a big decision to make as to whether to rematch Tim or go after someone else, like an Errol Spence-type fighter, who was in the crowd, by the way. So we'll see what happens on that level. There were some interesting comments made. I believe Andre Ward, who was ringside, you know, former world champ himself, he said, I don't want to say it could have been a completely different fight, but definitely would have been an easier fight for Tim had he not been cut and had he not been able, had he been able to see, quite frankly. When he said, Andre Ward continued, when you're bleeding like that, that does start to weaken you. And for whatever reason, his corner was not able to stop bleeding and it continued to bleed profusely. That is an understatement, I tell you. As we all know now, we've seen the videos. We probably saw the fight. I give a lot of credit to Tim Tsai for hanging in there initially. I thought it looked far worse than what it was. But as we saw the fight unfold, I thought, this is a really bad cut. And Tim Tsai did the best he could with what he had. So hats off to Tim. Great, great, great fight. And, you know, the other Aussie who was fighting last night, Liam Wilson, he thought he might avenge a loss last year, but he was coming in against Oscar Valdez, who was ready for him. And, Liam Wilson took a bit of a beating in the seventh round, and eventually the ref had to call off that fight. So the two Aussies who I thought would actually win actually lost. So when I mention any type of betting, don't listen to me. But here's another one that I called wrong. Yocasta Valle lost her fight, and Sunisa Superbad Estrada became the undisputed minimum weight champion with her victory over Yocasta. That was a fight that took place on the undercard of that Valdez-Wilson fight at the Desert Diamond Arena in Glendale, Arizona. So hats off again to the women who are out there fighting. And super bad. Looks like she's going places for sure. It's a decent little division they've got. And let's see what happens next for her. Good stuff. In other battles, speaking of bloody battles, by the way, I have to mention the Wardley Clark battle, without a doubt. Now, although they fought to a draw, it was a wow fight. Let me just read a very brief description, because there are so many stories spread across the internet, mainly by UK media writers. But nonetheless, here's a short, brief one. WBO number 6, WBA number 11, IBF number 12, WBC number 15 rated Fabio Wardley, 17-0-1, 16 knockouts, and 2020 Olympic super heavy bronze medalist. Big Fraser Clark, who's 8-0-1, 6 knockouts, battled to an epic draw at the O2 Arena in London, UK. The early rounds featured good exchanges, with both fighters taking punishment. Wardley hurt Clark in round 5 and dropped him with a barrage of punches right at the bell. Clark was deducted a point for low blow in round number 7. But nose damage to Wardley, and believe me, brutal nose damage to Wardley, seemed to take its toll as the momentum shifted over to Clark. The bout was temporarily stopped and around for the ring doctor to check out Wardley's mess of a nose, quote, and closing of the right eye. But both fought hard down the stretch, and in the end, the scores were 114, 113 for Wardley, 115, 112 for Clark, and 113, 113. So great fight put on by those two fellas. And there's quite a bit of the undercard to report as well. So let's get on with it. Heavyweight action. We saw, by the way, Alan the Savage Babic, 12-1, score a brutal 6-round technical knockout over Steve Robinson. Fan-friendly fight took place over, as I said, on the undercard at the O2 Arena. It's called a fusillade of Babic punches, prompted a stoppage by referee Sean McAvoy. 54 seconds, by the way, of that 6-round. And by the way, it was Babic's first fight since a Bridgeweight title defeat against Lukasz Rozenski 12 months ago. Other fight action, another fellow I called to win, lost. Florian Marko, our Albanian favorite, he's now 13-1-1. Lost to welterweight Chris Congo, 15-2, who scored his unanimous decision over the previously unbeaten Marko, by the way. Congo took Marko to school, winning 96-94, 96-93, 98-92. Marko, by the way, was deducted a point for hitting behind the head in round number 9. Obviously didn't help. We will talk about Ben Whitaker in a second, but I just want to tell you briefly, our silver medalist, who we were reported on quite a few years ago during the Olympics, and as we all know, a world-class showboater, Ben Whitaker, 7-0, he won, yep. He dropped Leon Willings, 7-2, by the way, 2 knockouts in round number 1, but was forced to go the full 8 in a light heavyweight bout after Willings got up, and scores were 78-73. So a great fight indeed, and especially if you enjoy Ben Whitaker, it's certainly one to watch. Another undercard action, we saw Callum Simpson win with a knockout over Dola Mababi in the super middleweight division, and Vidal Riley won over 10 over Mikhail Lawal in the cruiserweight division. Some brief news out of Canada for you. Middleweight Ryan Young, now 16-5, fighting out of Oakville, Ontario, upset fellow Canadian, previously unbeaten, Antonio Napolitano. Who's now 8-1-1, 4-4 knockouts. He fights out of St. Catharines, Ontario, just down the road from Oakville. A 10-round majority decision. And in the process, Young claimed the NCC Canadian middleweight title. The site of the event was the Hamilton Convention Center. Again, just up the road from both of them. One coming from one way, one coming from the other, to meet together in Hamilton. And the crowd was electric. Another sellout event, said promoter Dan Otter out of Three Lions Promotions. He said, although a few fights didn't go our way, he said, they were matched perfectly, giving the fans exactly what they deserve. We will be announcing our next show in the days to come. Congratulations, Dan. We look forward to hearing about it. Good for you. All right. Over in Japan, our friend Joe Kazumi is reporting Filipino sharpshooter Melvin Jerusalem, 22-3, dethroned WBC minimum weight champ Yudai Shigoka. He's 8-1 now, as he floored the Japanese title holder twice with well-timed right counters in rounds 2 and round 6. Winning a split decision, by the way. It was over 12 hard-fought rounds, I might add. And Jerusalem once again displayed a trick here and there by scoring one punch, second round stoppage over WBO. Jerusalem once displayed a trick at the same venue by scoring one punch, second round stoppage over WBO ruler Masataki Taniguchi in January of the previous year, so over a year ago. Anyway, this particular tilt was a seesaw affair, says Joe. But Melvin's two knockdowns paid off and wrestled, therefore, the belt from the game, but tough champ. So there you go. Out of Japan, some good news. I think there's more news out of Japan. Yep. Joe's reporting the unbeaten Japanese southpaw IBF 105-pound champ Jinjiro Shigyoka, 11-0. Nine knockouts, one no contest, by the way. Impressively kept his belt as he quickly sank IBF number 6 Filipino Jake Amparo. So like I've said before, we've seen the Japanese go toe-to-toe against the Koreans, and the Japanese are always going toe-to-toe against the Filipinos. Some great battles emerging from that side of the Pacific. Great to hear from Joe. He's also reporting that former WBO Bantam champ Tomoki Kamada halted Mexican Kevin Villanueva at the end of the 5th round in a scheduled 10-rounder. Villanueva quit on the stool after his continual absorption of punishment from the outset. And a bridgeweight battle saw Alexander Ju from Romania floored previously unbeaten Japanese heavyweight champ Mitsuhiro Taijama. He's now 10-1 with a well-timed right uppercut in round number 2. And then he pounded out a unanimous decision, 79-72 over 8 full rounds. The Romanian juror was too skillful and accurate for Taijima, who couldn't catch up with the Romanian with a good left hand. One more fight to report out of Japan, courtesy of K-World 3 Promotions. Japanese middleweight champ Raikou Kinmoto, he's 11-1 now, kept his national belt as he stopped Eric Kari, who's now 8-4-3, at 1 minute 53 seconds of the 6th round in a scheduled 10-rounder. Yep, it goes on. We've got a bit more to report here. Some good fighting to report. Former super middleweight champ Gilberto Zurdo Ramirez, who we reported on last week. He's now 46-1. Outboxed and frustrated, previously unbeaten WBA cruiserweight champ Arsene Gutmerian, 27-1. Over 12 rounds, and that is a place we mentioned, YouTube Theater in Inglewood, California, where Golden Boy have signed a long-term deal to hold fights. Ramirez never let Gulamirian get on track en route to his 118-110 on all three scorecards in that victory. Former WBO number 1 welterweight contender Alexis Rocha, by the way, 24-2, returned from his first loss to stop Frederick General Okundo Lawson, 30-5, with a technical knockout victory. Roca was credited with a knockdown in round number 6, when he sent Lawson into the ropes. Roca nearly got a referee stoppage in round number 7, and Lawson's corner stopped it after the round. In another crazy fight, I don't know if y'all watched it or not, but check out the YouTube replays on this one. Pitbull Cruz, wow, what a win. 26-2-1, overpowered and dethroned WBA super lightweight champ Rolando Roly Romero. He's now 15-2, 13 knockouts, getting an 8th round referee stoppage, and that took place at the T-Mobile Arena over in Las Vegas. Cruz had Romero on spaghetti legs in round number 1. Cruz continued to pressure. I've never heard that before. Cruz continued to pressure Romero with a relentless attack. Roly was deducted a point for excessively holding in round number 5. Cruz rocked Romero again in round number 7, and Roly barely got out of the round. The bout was stopped in round number 8, and Cruz really hurt Roly again. For more details, like I said, just check. Just Google this stuff. This is incredible. Incredible fighting that's taken place over the past couple of days. One of the best fights I saw. WBA middleweight champ Arislandi, the American Dream, Lara. He's now 33-3. Made quick work of WBA number 1 rated Michael Zarafa. He's now 31-5. 19 knockouts. On Saturday night over at the T-Mobile Arena on that undercard, 40-year-old Lara connected with a straight left that drops Zarafa, who barely beat the count, but then collapsed into the ropes. And the time was 2 minutes 59 seconds of that round. Let's have a quick look here. Yes, continuing along at the T-Mobile. WBC flyweight champ Julio Cesar Martinez, 21-3, kept his title by 12-round majority against previously unbeaten WBC number 14, Angelino Cordova, 18-1-1, 12 knockouts in Las Vegas, as I said, at the T-Mobile Arena. Martinez dropped Cordova twice in round 3 and with hard jabs, I might add. Cordova gave Martinez some problems in the ensuing rounds, but Martinez landed more damaging punches. Cordova ran the final round, and it cost him. So Martinez won with scores of 113, 113, 114, 112, 114, 112. Another great fight. You got to check this one out, too. This is a good one. In a clash for the vacant WBC interim super welterweight title, Sergio Flaco Bohachuk. He's now 23 knockouts, by the way, won a 12-round unanimous decision over Brian Mendoza. He's now 22-4 with 16 knockouts. On Saturday, again, on that undercard at the T-Mobile Arena, Bohachuk pressed the action and progressively built up a lead against the iron-jawed Mendoza. Mendoza rallied late, but it was a little too late, and scores were 117-11 twice. So there you go. Let's talk about Pulev. WBA number 10, heavyweight Kubrat Pulev, 31-3, scored a workman-like 12-round unanimous decision over late sub Ihor the Hulk. Here we go. Shevadutsky. 11-2, 9 knockouts to claim the WBA international belt on Saturday night at the Arena Artemek in Bulgaria. Two-time world challenger Pulev separated himself over the second half of the fight and scores on all three cards, 117, 111. Let's see if he can come back into those world rankings. Pulev was originally slated, as I mentioned a long time ago, to challenge WBA regular champ Mahmoud Char, but Char pulled out with an injury and had a cast on his left arm and was simply only able to observe at ringside. Also on that card, we saw cruiserweight Turvel Pulev, brother of Kubrat Pulev. He scored a sloppy 8-round unanimous decision over Roly Fagum, who's now 16-3-1. The 41-year-old Pulev, a 2012 Olympian, the same year that The Olympics allowed women to compete, by the way, won by Katie Taylor. And he prevailed 79-73, 89-73, 80-72. Another fight to speak of on that card, super middleweight Derek Osaka, 13-1, handed 39-year-old former contender Joel Julio. He's now 39-20, 33 knockouts, though. His 16th consecutive loss via third round knockout, a body shot, put Julio down for the count. So there's a bit of a wrap up from a great number of fights around the world took place recently. I mentioned Ben Whitaker. I said I'd give you a few more words because I do like this fella. He's now 7-0, and he was on the undercard of the Fabio Wardley Fraser Clark battle at O2 Arena in London, UK. So let's have just a few words. See if he did some showboating, and he did. But anyway, let's have a quick look here. Ben Whitaker. This is according to Sky Sports. Ben Whitaker repelled a stubborn Leon Willings to take an 8-round points win at the undercard over at the O2 in London. Whitaker dropped his opponent and sprinkled in a sustained spiteful combinations as well as showboating on his way to a clear 78-73 victory. Whitaker may be the ultimate showman, but he started out with destructive intent, says Sky Sports. He thumped repeated jabs into Willings' trunk, testing out his body and bringing Willings' gloves down. He worked that lead diligently, but suddenly injected vicious speed into his attack. A double jab set up a right cross that streaked into the head. Willings may have been patient, unwilling to get drawn in, but Whitaker still found room to work. Continues, Willings guided back to the ropes. The surgeon sent a left hook carving into his body and fired the same shot to the head before a right hand over the top sent Willings down to a knee. But Willings, the Central Area champion, was tough and he popped back up to his feet. He continued to swallow big rights from Whitaker, who fired into the head as the rounds progressed. Nor could Whitaker build as the master of the drunken style in his elaborate ring entrance as well resist showboating. He swayed from side to side, right in front of Willings at times, and mid-fight turned to the man from Cheshire's corner to tell off his trainer. But he didn't neglect the offensive work. Blood began to drip from a cut over Willings' right eye. As Willings sucked in air in the fifth round, Whitaker seemed to sense him weakening and ground forward behind more solid body shots. Defiant, Willings dredged up left hooks. He landed as well, but despite a firm hit, Whitaker scarcely blinked and continued to operate in his own inimitable style. People wonder whether Whitaker took that shot just to prove he could take a shot. Anyway, Willings didn't lose heart and still launched blow after blow at Whitaker as the latter dug in further cruel body shots, his determined efforts obliging the Olympic silver medalist to go the distance. So there you go. Some fine reporting out of Sky Sports on one of our favorite fighters here on Talk and Fight, Ben Whitaker. All righty. Another really, really great fight. The Isaac Pitbull Cruz versus Rolly Romero, which I mentioned earlier. You know, the interesting here is what Rolly was saying after the fight, because as we all know, Rolly Romero was trash talking Cruz leading up to the fight, referring to him as a chihuahua instead of his nickname, the Pitbull. And that hype culminated with Romero sporting a gold chain with a chihuahua amulet featuring Cruz's face during fight week. And when asked about the chain at the post-fight press conference, Cruz's father and trainer, Isaac Cruz Sr., didn't hold back. He said, "We made him eat his words. We trained hard and did what we planned. As far as the chain goes, he can keep it because that is a lifelong reminder of the beating my son gave to him." Just thought I'd throw that in there. Speaking of women around the world fighting, the Women's International Boxing Association, WIBA, sanctioned a fight a couple of weeks ago that I forgot to mention. It took place at the Swiss Grand Hotel in Seoul, South Korea. and it took place between Ryo Kyung-soo fighting out of South Korea and Ryona Yoshikawa out of Japan, but it ended in a split draw. I just wanted to make mention of that because, as I said earlier, among the men, they're fighting toe-to-toe, Japan versus South Korea, Japan versus the Philippines. There are some great matchups indeed happening over there in Asia right now, not only among the men, but also among the women as well. Thought I'd bring it to your attention. Speaking of women in the ring, a Canadian went up against an American a few days ago, taking place in Harmony, Pennsylvania, at the Steamfitters 449 Union Hall. Billed the Brawl at the Hall. And it's promoted by our good friend, Derek Gianta, out of Gianta Management. And it was live streamed. And also, the WIBA had a vacancy for one of their world title belts on the line. So this is a decent battle among two veterans. Mary Casanasa won that vacant WIBA super middleweight title over Olivia the Predator Giralta. She has Girula, sorry. And she's been battling in Canada and around the world, quite frankly, for quite some time. She is a veteran, without a doubt. But anyway, it went the distance. And as I said, the American Mary Casanasa, she won. Weighing in, by the way, at 162. Girula weighed in at 169, pound and change over the limit. So she had to go back, lose a pound and a bit, and come back and fight. A little bit about Girula. Prior to this title fight, the WIBA super middleweight title had been vacant for about 4 years. The previous champion was Emma Kozin, who had defeated Maria Lindberg by unanimous decision in October, way back 2019, I think. That was even before COVID hit us, I think, yes. So anyway, both Girula and Casanasa are rated in the top 10 by their computerized ratings of the International Boxing Organization. Girula is rated number 4. Casanasa is rated number 5. Is that number? Yeah, I think that's going to flip around, I think, after this particular fight. But nonetheless, it should be noted that Girula did not have a proper trainer for much of her career, as was shown in the documentary titled The Predator's Last Stand, which was released a few years ago and can be viewed on the Tubi channel if you get Tubi, T-U-B-I. Girula also had to train while also without a sponsorship and also having to have a part-time job. So she's had a tough battle along the way and, you know, often took fights not only in her opponent's home country where she had to travel to and possibly face biased judges, possibly, but she also took on many Canadians as well. Girula is a former WBC super featherweight champ. She defeated the girl from Edmonton, Jelena Mijailovic, who I believe is still fighting, by unanimous decision to win a title back in 2009. So that shows you how long Girula has been fighting. She's a decent champ, a real road warrior, and good to see her going down to, is it, what did I say, Pennsylvania? Let's have a quick look here. Yes, Harmony, Pennsylvania, traveling down to Pennsylvania to take part in a really decent fight with an American, as I said, but lost. Let's quickly move along to more news in the women's boxing category. The IBA Women's World Boxing Championship is going to take place in Kazakhstan in 2024, as stated by the IBA Board of Directors. is interesting to note that this particular tournament, which has taken place previously in Kazakhstan a few years ago, but this time around, the prize money for the women is a substantially a bit more. First place, boxers get awarded $200,000. The overall prize total, the fund, is nearly $5 million, $4.8 million for all 12 categories. And includes 10% that belongs to the head coaches of the national team. And they're looking forward to a great championship. And greeting boxers next year, said IBF President Umar Kremlev. And he's in a bit of a battle himself with World Boxing Organization to represent his country's associations at the Olympics, not only in Paris, but ongoing. And World Boxing, as you know, I've reported often, has stated their case, and they're holding tournaments. And hopefully the IOC will make their ruling soon and enable boxing to continue at the Olympics forevermore, quite frankly. Because boxing, as you know, is one of the original Olympic, going back to ancient Greece, sports, and it deserves to be in the Olympics forevermore. Speaking of the IBA, the inaugural Mandela African Boxing Cup will take place April 15th to April 21st at the International Convention Center. That's in Durban, South Africa. Of course, with the blessing of his family, that's Nelson Mandela's family. It's been named after the great South African leader, activist, and advocate of peace. The competition organized by the IBA, the African Boxing Confederation, and the South African Boxing Organization will feature 12 women and 13 men's weight categories. So that is going to be a wonderful tournament to report on, because we've been reporting for quite a number of months now on the fighting that's taking place, not only in South Africa, but across Africa. From Ghana and Nigeria and West Africa to Tanzania and Kenya and Uganda and East Africa, and even some of the North African states as well, who are putting boxers into the ring. Anyway, thanks very much for joining me. Appreciate it. That's all the news we have today. Remember to like, share, subscribe, hit that notification bell for me, and we'll see you again 11 a.m. talkandfight.com. Thank you very much. And let's have a quick see if there's nothing else going on. So we're on our way out. Thank you very much.